our best ideas don't come when we're stressed out and maxed out. Mm-hmm. And so then if we start from that premise, if we give ourselves less time to work, we actually get the most effective things done.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Happy Human Podcast. On today's episode, I had a special guest named Joe Sanek. Joe is a published author, a keynote TEDx speaker, a business consultant, and an awesome podcaster. I met Joe at Podcast Movement, a convention for podcasters that I attended this summer, and Joe told me about his book and everything that he was doing, and I knew that I had to have him on here. Joe is a little different than the normal guests I tend to have because Joe is not in the health and wellness space, but Joe is in the space of making people better. His book called Thursday is the New Friday just came out yesterday. Go to Amazon, check it out, or check the link in the show notes. The book is all about how to take back time and how to get more time out of our lives by working less. And if you're going to be a healthy, happy human like I want you to be, I think that working less and living more is a big part of that. So definitely check out Joe's book. It's live on Amazon and anywhere else books are sold right now. And enjoy this episode.
All right, Joe, welcome. Thank you for joining me here on the Healthy Happy Human Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. So I'm going to hop right in here. The first question that I have for you, which is based on your new book that just came out, which is why is Thursday the new Friday? What has changed?
Yeah, I think a lot's changed from the pandemic where we have looked at work completely differently, where we've realized that the way that we often were working pre-pandemic and even in the lead up, the decade before, wasn't as effective as maybe we thought it was. That Friday really was a half-lived day. It was the day that we'd host birthday parties or baby showers or do cheesy team building activities at work. It really has been a part of the weekend for a while when we dig into the history. I like to say that, Friday's been cheating on the work week for a long time. Let's just call it what it is. So let's just move it over to the weekend category.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. And I love that term you just used, half-lived day, because I'm all about, in general, living a full life, right? My goal is for my clients and for my listeners, full and fulfilled life is what I'm always saying. And that half lived where it's like, yeah, I'm going in on Friday, but it's like, what am I really doing is a big, I think, drain. And just for the listeners, I know that you work a lot with practitioners, being that you came from the counseling space, but now you work with people on building their business. But I like to speak more to the quote unquote end user, where it's like, how does this affect the average everyday person? So for someone who maybe isn't an entrepreneur or running their own business, how does this new era of working affect them?
Yeah, I think we have to go back a little bit to really understand time before we even get to that person, because we want to deconstruct a couple things before we say, like, what are we going to reconstruct? And so if we just go back to the Babylonians 4,000 years ago or so, they just made up the 7-day work week. That was something that was based on their own celestial view of the stars. And the Romans, they had a 10-day week. The Egyptians had an 8-day week. So if we just start with, we made this up. And then fast forward to the 1800s, early 1900s, the average person was working 10 to 14 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week. And so just tons of work. They were working relentlessly. And then in 1926, Henry Ford, to sell more cars, he started the 40-hour work week. Now, people had tried to push it before him. There had been a lot of advocacy groups and unions, but really it was Henry Ford in 1926 when he said that people aren't going to buy a car just to get to work faster, but instead, if they have a weekend where they have something fun to go do, they're going to buy a car to do that. So it was to sell more cars less than 100 years ago. So again, less than 100 years ago, we made all this up. So if we start with that premise that most of what we consider to be firm, solid things, we just made up, that makes it a lot easier to say, how do we deconstruct it? So to your question of someone that wants a 4-day work week, they're working a traditional job, what does that typically look like? Well, what we're seeing work is that usually it's small groups of 6 to 8 people that read the book together, that are inspired together, that are dreaming together. They're usually within a department and they have a very similar job type. You don't want a big diverse group of like an accountant and then, someone from creative, someone from sales. You want very similar job roles. So then this group will often bring in their supervisor to talk about what are the KPIs, the key performance indicators of how they're judged. So then you at least have a baseline of the two, maybe three metrics that this team is being judged on currently. Having this conversation with the supervisor and saying, you know, if this experiment works where we try this for a couple months, it's going to make you look like an innovative boss. You're going to look good to your boss. We're going to discover all these things together. So a good supervisor would say, hey, let's give it a whirl. Whereas, you know, someone that's kind of stuck in that industrialist era is going to say, no, I want you to work your 40 hours. That's what you're hired to do. So then the next step with that group is that they really define their boundaries outside of work. This is where a lot of these productivity books really miss the mark, where they say, here's the prescriptive model on how to be productive, but they don't go internal with people. They don't look at the actual slowing down. And that's kind of what's key within this book is that before we're ever productive, we have to optimize our brains to slow down. And so as a team, they're saying, what's the culture for the next 2 or 3 months going to be? So do we have no emails after six? Do we say we're not doing any sort of emailing on Friday, Saturday, Sunday? We're not doing work on those days, because it just takes one person to start an email chain and then people start feeling left out and then they're back into their old habits. So you set these boundaries and then on Monday, get together as a team to talk through how that those boundaries went over the weekend, because you want to prime the brain to be able to come into work for those 4 days. So then you do the 4 days. And then every single week, you want to be giving that supervisor an update on those KPIs. So we're up 2% here, we're down 5% here compared to previous weeks. And then what are we going to do about it to address it this coming week over this period of time? And then at the very end, what you do is you do a full 360 evaluation of how it went. And some teams may do this monthly. So they may do three of those. They may just do it at the very end. So then they can evaluate what went well. I mean, you think about if a team knows they have the potential to work a 4 day work week, they're going to bust it during those 4 days and probably kill their goals and maybe even do better. And so then that shows that supervisor that there's actually some potential for some creativity there.
Right. I love that. First of all, super actionable. And for anyone listening, actually, Joe just broke that down super well so that you can actually take these steps and implement them, as opposed to just hearing and like, and this can be very real for you, for someone thinking like, oh, well, there's no way that my job would allow me to do this. He's laying out the actual steps it would take for you to maybe be the person who pushes the boundary and starts the change, because change has to start with someone. And I like that, because that kind of leads me right into my next question, which you kind of alluded to at the end here, which is like, why is it so important to be doing less? Like, aren't we supposed to be always doing more? Don't I want more out of life? Don't I want to be more work, not less work, you know?
Yeah, I think intuitively, we know that our best ideas come when we slow down. You think about, you're in the shower and you have this great idea, you're out for a run, or you're out on a hike, or you're turning the radio off, and you decide you're going to just drive for a while. Our best ideas don't come when we're stressed out and maxed out. And so then, if we start from that premise, if we give ourselves less time to work, we actually get the most effective things done. So imagine you did switch from a 5 day to a 4 day week. Are you going to do the worst 5 or 10 things, or are you going to do the best 5 or 10 things? So then you start doing the work that is the best use of your time, the highest purpose of your time, the thing that's going to multiply your business or your outcomes. Instead of the small things. And so, you know, take your typical small business owner. I work mostly with therapists. Say they have a therapy practice and they have 10 clinicians, and they can only do 12 out of the 16 things on their to-do list this week because they're working fewer days. Is taking the trash out going to be number one? Is vacuuming going to be number one? No, they're going to see that, wow, I have these big picture things that I'm doing for the practice. I should probably hire a cleaning service. I should probably, you know, have my front desk person do this. I'm going to take these things off my plate that really aren't the very best use of my time.
Right. I love that. So basically it's a forced prioritization. You know, there's a concept I love, which is, you know, do less to do more. And I use, you know, get exactly that example of, you know, fitness is a great one, where people always just think they're like, oh, like just working out, like I should just work out more or run more or do more. But it's like, in reality, it's like, well, why don't you just work out better? Why don't you just understand a little bit better, you know, what you're doing, and then you can actually do more with less time. So I think that that's exactly a great point. And my next question is, you know, exactly like you just said, you work with a lot of counselors, and I know you came up as a counselor yourself. And so I'm wondering, again, speaking to the quote unquote end user, like I said before, is how do you see, what similarities do you see between like helping the individual and building a business, you know, like meaning someone who wants to lead a healthy, happy life, right? Like that's the whole point of my podcast, and someone who wants to build a business, an entrepreneur. What similarities do you see there?
Yeah, I think it always starts with an individual. So whether we're looking at a big business, you know, I was speaking to Nissan Infinity Canada recently about these concepts, and it's still an individual person that I am talking to set up the speaking gig. It's always an individual. And so I actually start with, we have to first start with our internal inclinations. And so there's three inclinations that successful people have, and just evaluating, do those come naturally to me or do they need some work? You know, when we do that inner work and then move into slowing down and then move into the highest productivity and creativity, that's the flow that then sets us up for success. Whereas, you know, most of the business books or productivity books are on one side where they're saying, here's the equation, here's the prescription for how to do this. Whereas mine's more of a menu. Here, I'm going to teach you how to think. Mm-hmm. Or there's on the other side, there's these woo-woo books that say, you know, make a vision board, don't do anything, just let it manifest. But it's actually those two coming together. The brain research is showing that when we slow down effectively, when we use this neuroscience to do kind of what you're saying happens in the workout world, where, yeah, if you're smarter about how you set your brain up, it's going to allow you to unlock things in a way that's completely different than if you just were stressed out all the time.
Yeah, right. I love that. And exactly like you just said, it's kind of that melding the two. So it's, you know, I always people want extremes. There's always the, you know, all this or all that. There, it's like the pendulum swings from one side to the other. It goes from, like you said, completely, you know, the business suit and tie Wall Street and of the 80s to like, okay, now we're kind of woo-woo hippie 90s, and now we're swinging back to this, and it just kind of goes. But it's like, where we really need to be is finding that middle ground. And I think that you're doing a great job of melding those two. So the next thing I want to ask is, you know, being that you've worked with so many counselors and therapists, and this is going to be a little bit more personal to you, but like, it's, I feel like for people who, or, you know, people talk to me as a coach, or I'm not a therapist, but, you know, I have people who talk to therapists. I've interviewed a lot of therapists, a lot of psychoanalysts and that kind of thing. And, you know, people think that someone like you or like I, like maybe like has it all together, you know, where it's like, oh, okay, well, because you're a coach who coaches coaches, or because you're a business and an entrepreneur, and because you've written so many books and you have a successful podcast. So I'm wondering, like, what are the struggles that maybe you've gone through personally, or that you've seen with other people in this space, like therapists, coaches and stuff, that some people might not expect?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few. I'm an unexpected single dad recently. I'm in the middle of kind of uncoupling and being the primary raiser of my daughters. And so, I mean, I think that there's all sorts of things that happen in life that are unexpected. And so 2012, my oldest daughter had open heart surgery that year. And that was just a tough year. And right after we got that she was all clear, everything's good, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And so we all have these things that are unexpected in life. And I think that that's where do we live a life that's reactionary to the external crisis? You know, the unexpected divorce, the unexpected heart surgery, the unexpected cancer, or do we take that time to step back and say, what do I really need right now? what do I need to learn in this moment? How do I stay grounded? Even if the things that are outside of my control feel like they're acting in a way that I would never act. And so for me, what that looked like was returning to a daily meditation practice and, you know, looking at like, what am I putting into my body even more to say, you know, I don't want to be just fueled up on coffee and carbs. I got to do things that give me real energy, you know, the excitement of the day, you know. So even right before hopping on here, it's like, I did my morning meditation. I did my morning plank. I did a bulletproof kind of coffee blend where it's got, you know, greens in it and chia seeds and banana and peanut butter with, you know, cold brew coffee. So I know that's going to make me feel better. So I still get my caffeine that I like, you know, oh so much, but it's a step in the healthier direction. And so I think that too often we see these people who have written books or have podcasts or whatever as these gurus that are going to solve all of our problems, when in reality, they can be guides to us. They can teach us the menu. But ultimately we have to return to ourselves and say, really, in this moment, what do I need? And how do I evaluate those needs? And how do I adjust them over time and realize that there's not just a prescription that is always going to work for everyone, but instead it's this ongoing process of experimenting, evaluating, and then reassessing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. I do appreciate you being open and honest. And 100%, I agree so much. Exactly. I love that what you just said, where it's like a guru isn't going to just solve your problems, but they can give you a menu and something to work with. And I say all the time to my clients, it's like, I don't have the answer for you. I don't have like, I can't say like, if you follow step A, B, C perfectly, that 100% you will get the result. But what I can do is give you a good set of options that I've seen work with many clients in the past. And based on your unique life, we can figure it out, but it takes a level of effort. And the thing that I've just wrote down, I'm taking notes as you're talking, is that you said, do we live a reactionary life versus being, you know, I always say in the driver's seat. And to me, that's a huge difference. So I'm wondering, where do you see that, like the importance of that? And what's the difference to you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, to be intentional about what my weekend looks like. Mm-hmm. So for example, on Friday, we had custody mediation, which, you know, this whole process is just a terrible process. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so my kids are with my ex, you know, for the weekend. And so then to say, well, what do I want this weekend to be? I had my big to-do list of stuff that I could do around the house and, you know, get laundry going, change sheets, all that stuff. But then I stepped back on Saturday and said, you know, honestly, I need an adventure. And so I called up a friend of mine who, you know, was about 45 minutes away. You know, he's staying close to the lake in Michigan here. And, you know, I drove up the Leelanau Peninsula, met up with him, went to the beach. We went out to eat, got ice cream, played a board game. Like, well, it was just like the adventure and the time outside that I needed. And sometimes we need to give ourselves that permission to say, what do I actually need right now? Instead of what do I feel like I'm supposed to do? I think so much of what we tend to put our time and our effort and our work into is a script that someone else gave us that we don't even think through, you know, in the same way that we just accept the 40-hour work week because Henry Ford did it, or we accept the 7-day week because the Babylonians gave us it. Sure, there's practical things that if I just said I'm living an 8-day week, we kind of mess up the world, right? Like I wouldn't be in sync with anyone else. And I can also question some of the things that I've just been handed and say, okay, why do I need to live in a certain way? Why do I have to say that this is how my life's going to be or how clean my house is going to be? I get to choose what makes me feel good. Maybe it's cleaner than the average person. Maybe it's dirtier. And giving yourself permission to live that life that's not in reaction to something outside of you, but instead the internal direction that you want to head within the best of your abilities. Like to me, that unlocks so much in regards to happiness and health.
Right. I agree so much. And just the way you started it off right there, the word that I love is intentional, right? Because what you just said, you're like, well, I called up a friend. We went out to eat. We took a drive. We played some board games. We maybe had a few drinks or something, whatever. It's like someone could look at that and be like, well, what do you mean? That seems like a cheat day to me, you know? But the point is that you did it intentionally. It was not like, okay, like, I'm just going to like, I don't know what I'm going to do today. And then like all of a sudden the weekend flies by and I did nothing but just like hang out and eat. But it's like, I knew that this is what I needed for my mental health, for my well-being, and that I would be better coming out of this than I am going into it. And the intent is the key difference maker in that to me.
Yeah. And then you enter into the work week with that same level of intention. Mm-hmm. So I know that I spent the weekend doing things that would genuinely slow me down and help me feel ready. I slept until 10:45 on Saturday morning. You know, I didn't have my kids. There's nothing I had to be up for. Mm-hmm. Usually as a highly productive person, that's really hard for me to do. Mm-hmm. And I gave myself permission to do that because I knew this coming week would be tough because I've got 27 podcast interviews. I've got tons going on. It's like this book launch is a big thing. And I wanted to feel rested and ready to go into that. So then to be intentional with the work week and say, almost every single minute of the time that I'm working is allocated to something that's moving the needle forward. So then I'm hyper productive, but then it's not the way I live in the quote hustle culture where I'm working 60 or 70 hours a week doing this and getting addicted to work. Instead, it's okay, I'm going to sprint like crazy for a short period of time. And then when I'm done, you know, this evening, I'm going for a long walk with a friend of mine and probably going for a swim. And so having that intention of what does my body need and trusting that I know kind of what I need to do and not falling into the typical narrative is kind of how I structure things with my life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. That narrative, like you said, of that whole like hustle culture and grind, more, more, more. Again, we kind of put these things on a pedestal these days, especially with Instagram and social media and stuff like that. It's like, oh, well, you're not waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Like you just said, I slept in, but sometimes you need that. And then the thing that happens is that as you said, going into this work week, you'll be more productive. So that's the thing of like, okay, if more was better, then that would be a good answer. But it actually ends up being a disservice to us where we just end up grinding ourselves into a pulp, or again, burning out because we're trying to do too much and, you know, not being able to slow down ever. As you said, you know, slowing down is a skill. I think, you know, that's something that a lot of people don't have because we've glorified this hustle and grind culture for so long. So I'm curious, you know, what's maybe a piece of advice that you can leave for someone who is stuck in that feeling of like, well, I have to do more. I can't slow down because like, if I slow down, other people are going to pass me maybe, or I'm going to look bad or whatever it is that's going on in their head.
Yeah. So, I mean, even just thinking about the tortoise and the hare story, it's mm-hmm. like, we hear the story of like the tortoise just kept going, never rested. They ended up winning the race. But in reality, if the hare had just set an alarm clock when he took his nap, he would have won the race, you know? And so it's like, why are we saying you just need to hustle, hustle, hustle and be the tortoise, even if it's slow? It's like the hare was doing awesome. And then he took a nap, which is fine, but he didn't set an alarm. And so like when we look at it, it's really interesting how there, so out of University of Illinois, there was this interesting research study where they were looking at vigilance decrement. So vigilance, how well you can pay attention to something, decrement meaning breaking down over time. And so the idea was that, you know, when you're putting energy into a really mentally draining subject, it's like a glass of water. You're just pouring out your energy, pouring out your focus. And at the end of it, you really just have to kind of regroup, go take a nap, leave for the day, whatever it is. They wanted to challenge that. And so they did this study where they brought in students and they had a computer where they gave them a random 4-digit number. So say it was 4312. So 4312, whenever that number comes up, you hit the button. There's going to be other 4-digit numbers. Just ignore them. So hyper boring task to do for an hour of just watching these numbers come up over and over and over. So then they saw that there was vigilance decrement. The amount that the students paid attention at the end was worse than at the beginning. Very expected. Now, what they didn't expect was what happened in the second part of the study. Same exact structure, given a 4-digit number, same period of time. But at the 1/3 mark, they gave them a 1-minute break. They said something like, you know, we put you on the wrong computer, hang out in the lobby. They didn't have their phones or anything digital. So they just had to hang out for a minute. They brought them back, did the other third of the study. So now at the 2/3 mark, they gave them another 1-minute break. And then they finished the study. They saw there was no vigilance decrement, meaning they paid attention just as well at the end as they did at the beginning. So if we think about the neuroscience behind this, it's, you know, our brains are really old. If you've walked down the same trail and heard there was a tiger there for 40 years, but you never saw a tiger, your vigilance is going to go down. You're not going to pay attention to a tiger. You're going to have a conversation with your friend. You're going to just be thinking about something. But if you just yesterday heard that someone got mauled by a tiger on the trail you're walking, you're going to be more vigilant. Our brains are the same way. When we disrupt a boring activity and just go take a 1-minute break and come back, they actually found that that micro break, it doesn't even have to be this huge, like 3-day weekend. These micro breaks actually reset our brains. And there's so much neuro research showing how even just the environment that we create around us and the way that we do our work can actually make us more productive in a shorter period of time.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that. I haven't actually heard that study, but it goes very hand in hand with a lot of the other things like the Pomodoro, you know, 45 mm-hmm. minutes of work and then 15 minutes of rest, or you know, time blocking, but leaving in little 5-minute, you know, transition times and things like that. So all of this stuff, I definitely see a ton of value in. And it's clear that exactly from that story, from that study, that, you know, there's value in rest, right? And like you just said, taking a nap, there's nothing wrong with that, especially as you said, you know, you probably do. I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. There's no way that if I get up at 5 a.m. and do 8 things of work, and that, you know, by noon, I've probably done an entire day's worth of work, that I can't justify taking a 30-minute nap or something like that, because again, I'll get more done. So it's that same concept of doing less to do more. And I think that is an awesome message from you and from your whole book. So the last thing that I want to ask you before I let you go, because I know that you have 27 other interviews this week, is just, you know, I always ask every guest that I have on to leave the listeners with one action step that they can take literally as soon as this podcast ends to start living a healthier, happier life. And it can be about work, it can be personal life, it can be fitness, nutrition, it can be anything related, but just something that you do or that you would recommend to live a healthy, happy life.
Yeah. So I would start with the weekend, because, and I would start with the slowing down, because if we don't do that well, we're not going to do anything else well. And so I would say this coming weekend, whenever you're listening to this, add something to your weekend that's going to give value. It's going to help you feel happier, and remove something from your weekend that you just don't want to do. So it could be, okay, this weekend, I'm going to pay the neighbor kid to mow my lawn, or this weekend, I'm going to use Instacart to get my groceries so I don't have to go grocery shopping. Just remove something and add one thing. And if you do that enough, you're going to realize, wow, I wasn't living the fullest weekend that I really could be living. And you're going to find that Monday, you're just ready to sprint like crazy because you had such a great time slowing down.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Because again, if we are beholden to this 5-day work week, which hopefully not for too much longer, if you'll have anything to say about it, but then the weekend is our only time to quote unquote rest and relax and enjoy ourselves. And yet we're running errands and we're doing all this other stuff. So it ends up being that, yes, we're working for 5 days during the week at our job, but then we're just working on the weekend to do our household chores and all that stuff. So using that time to actually slow down can be invigorating for us.
Absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Joe. Thank you for coming on. Just real quick, if you want to tell people, you know, where they can find you, where they can find your book and all the other stuff that you have going on.
Yeah. So the book is called Thursday is the New Friday. You can get it wherever you get your books. It could be your local bookstore, have them pre-order it or order it. You can get it from Amazon or all sorts of online places. Over at joesanok.com, we're putting together experiments and reporting out people's experiments that they do. We know this is going to be beyond just me doing it, that it's going to be people trying new things and saying this worked, this didn't work in different industries. We also are going to have a list of book clubs that are getting together. So we want this to be a communal thing. We know that unlike 1926, when Henry Ford was the decision maker and power broker to start the 40-hour work week, we know this is going to be a communal effort, bringing together the research, bringing together experiments and saying, this is how it's working, so that we can really use the community to reshape society.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And again, as you said, COVID has showed us a lot, and it showed us that the way we thought about things don't really have to be the way that they are. And I think that this is going to be a big push in the future, and it's going to change a lot. So thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on, and have a great day.
Thanks so much, Paul.
All right. Boom. I hope that you guys really enjoyed that podcast. I really enjoyed talking to Joe, and I thought it was really cool the way he gave actionable steps to really take what he's talking about, like turning your 5-day work week into a 4-day work week, like doing more with less time, like being less overworked and more overjoyed, and making it really actionable and attainable for anyone, regardless of where you're working. So definitely re-listen to this podcast. Definitely go check out Joe's book. And as always, I'll see you next week. Stay healthy, stay happy, my friends.